Local news on Week in Review. Now, Ken, we're going to look at the local news, and
I just ask you one quick question before we kick off today?
You can.
You mentioned before on the station or in the programme that you're from Lusk. Yes. You're the type of person who might have dropped into Apple Green, picked up some petrol and some coffee on the way home. Is there something you need to tell us, Declan?
Declan's
been distracted for during the week.
Well, Ken, I can absolutely assure you that if that had been the case, I probably wouldn't be sitting here.
I think you would have been. That's why we know how dedicated you are.
No, I wish it was. But alas, it's not me.
Okay.
Yeah. Alas, it's not me. I know we say there in the start that we don't normally cover stories that are talked about in the main news areas during the week. But I think it would be remiss of us not to cover this story, seeing as it is so local and affects so many people in the local area here. And that is the good news for the relatives of the Stardust victims that's come out this week.
Yeah.
And I suppose it shows the power of politics. They say all politics is local, but two local TDs in Tommy Broon and Finian McGrath, who have a little bit of power now. And,
yes.
And they're using it to good effect.
Absolutely for change,
So, do you want to tell us a bit more?
So, I mean, obviously just we're talking about the Stardust disaster, and that happened in 1981 on Valentine's Day, and 48 people died in the fire. Up to 214 were injured, and many of them still bear the scars. And as the 36th anniversary of the tragedy approaches, some of the families and survivors are still fighting for justice and determined to get to truth of what happened on that dreadful night. The truth has eluded them for the past three decades. Despite their efforts, they've been stymied by the state inaction, political indifference and legal roadblocks. As you're saying, there has been a glimmer of hope. And in 2008, senior counsel Paul Coffey was tasked by the then government to conduct a review of new evidence presented by the Stardust campaigners. Crucially, he concluded that the original 1982 Stardust Tribunal of Inquiry's finding that the fire was probably the result of arson should not stand, and the record of Doyle was corrected to reflect this. The arson theory has always rested uneasy with the families. Not only did it exonerate the owners of the Stardust for any blame, it indirectly cast suspicion on the innocent staff and patrons who were there on the night. It was also perceived as a slur on the very communities that had suffered the most. And much to the disappointment of the Stardust Victims Committee, no new inquiry was sanctioned into the cause of the fire following the Coffey report in 2009. And as I say, last week, there was a breakthrough. Independent TD Tommy Broon, who is from this area, tabled a motion calling for the commission of investigation into the Stardust fire. The government found itself on the back foot when, again, Independent Alliance Minister and local TD Finian McGrath argued strongly in favour of supporting the motion and even suggesting that this could be a resigning issue for him. A compromise was reached, and Doyle passed a government counter-motion to appoint an independent person to examine any new or updated evidence gathered by the Stardust families.
And Ken, do you think what do we think is going to be different this time compared to times gone by and other inquiries and other investigations that have happened?
The families themselves got together, and they got an independent researcher to come in, a girl called Geraldine Foy.
Right.
And she would have gone through all the papers back from 1982 and 2009. She got them under Freedom of Information.
Okay.
So she's found that there were some gaps in knowledge and some errors made in the previous reports, so that they feel that there is new evidence out there, particularly around when the fire was first noticed.
Okay.
There's witness information there that wasn't collated at the time. They felt that, you know, the maps and stuff that were directing people in and out of the place weren't properly done by the guard at the time, so there's a lot of misinformation. So they feel there's an awful lot of stuff that's still to be uncovered.
And I suppose investigative procedures and processes improve over the years as well.
Yeah.
So, and new thinking comes about and new ways of looking at things.
Yeah.
And that all helps, I suppose, to get to the bottom of it.
Well, so what they hope is, I mean, what the governor is saying, you know, if this assessment established the evidence of new evidence, then they will set up a commission of investigation.
Okay.
And out of that, you know, and I say, in an era where we're cynical about politics, you know, about Tony and Finian have sucked at their guns and done something for the local people, and, you know, hopefully the truth will become evident to
the
people that need us more than anything else.
It'll give people, it won't change what happened, and
no.
It won't bring back people, as we said, but it certainly will give people some solace if the truth were found after all this time. Okay, we'll move on to Craig Ciaran promoting health and well-being.
Well, again, I mean, if you look at the GAA, the GAA, you know, has approximately 750,000 members around Ireland. There's over 1,000 clubs. And again, they're involved in, like, you know, healthy and the promotion of healthy activity for citizens. And, you know, Craig Kieran, which is based in Dunnecarty, hosted the launch of the GAA's Healthy Club Roadshow last week. The roadshow will travel to all four provinces to showcase the GAA's Healthy Clubs project, an initiative focused on improving the health of Ireland through its clubs and its communities. The project aims to deliver information and programmes concerning areas such as healthy eating, physical activity, emotion and well-being, anti-smoking initiatives and community development. It's in the second year, so, and Craig Kieran was selected to be one of the 60 clubs in the second phase. There's three other Dublin clubs, Raheny, Thomas Davis and Kilmacud Crokes. And at the event, the GAA President Aegan O'Farrell said that the importance of the project and health to the organisation, it has always been the core business of the GAA to help and promote health and well-being for everyone. If we can feed into healthier communities and a better, healthier Ireland, we at the GAA are very much delighted to be part of that. So formally joining the Healthy Club programmes last year, Craig Kieran began their own projects to help improve health and community over 3 years with the creation of the Dunnecarty Together group. Club President Aidan O'Toole spoke about the inception of the group and the club's 5-year plan dedicated to better well-being in the area. The whole area of Dunnecarty Together was to help each other reach out and get our mutual goals, to assist each other in the ways that we could. And such then, they've gone on to have such initiatives as an Operation Transformation Programme, which was set up last year. So 120 people take part over 16 weeks. And 13% of the people had no connection to Craig Kieran. It has also worked with the local school to run a national Run for a Mile, an activity where both students and teachers take part in physical activity together over 4 times a week. Now, I hope it's all the teachers. Craig Kieran member also said they promoted and launched a programme dedicated to mental well-being. And one of the initiatives was the annual hill climb to the Sugarloaf. They started a couple of years ago. They decided, you know, they could do the Sugarloaf because the youngest or the oldest in the group could do it. I have to say the last part of it would be pretty difficult if you're quite young or old, but, you know,
it probably would, yeah. Although I've never climbed the Sugarloaf myself, but I believe it's a reasonably easy thing to do.
Yes, but at the end of it you do a bit of scrambling.
A bit of scrambling.
There's
a motorbike up to do it, no?
No, you wouldn't get a motorbike, but you have to sort of climb. You can't just walk.
Right.
You step up
so
and down things.
You're on all fours.
You're
on
fours at times.
Right, okay.
So it is a bit of fun.
Great.
But
so
it's a great initiative.
You've obviously been up this Sugarloaf, have you?
What I should say, there's the tourist route and the other route.
and we know which one Ken does.
The tourist route, I'd say.
No. You go around the back and up the top. It takes much longer and it's much more fun.
Good stuff. Okay, well done to Craig Kieran. And as I said, I'm sure Craig Kieran wasn't in the news anywhere else this week. The young lady is looking to raise €100,000 for some essential surgery in the US, Ken.
Again, this is it's very interesting when you delve into it. So we're talking about Courtney Manning, and she's from Coolock. And when she was born 10 weeks premature, she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. And she said, "I couldn't walk until I was 3, but with the help of my mum and her determination, I finally took my first steps." And Courtney, and she's now 18. And she's saying, "For years I never had any operations, Botox injections or splints. However, in 2013 I started having problems with my Achilles tendons. And in September 2014 I had my first round of Botox injections into my calves and my right foot was put in a cast. This failed to solve the problems and as a result I had to undergo surgery. So in March 2016, which is just, you know, last year, she had her first major operation when her right Achilles tendon was lengthened. The operation did its job, but unfortunately it's given me lots of complications," she said. "Since the operation, my condition has worsened and I can see my mobility disincreasing. This has caused me lots of pain daily and sleepless nights. At a recent appointment with my doctor, I told her that the spasticity, which is the tightness in the muscles and legs, is taking over, so I need to get this surgery done as soon as possible, and I struggle to walk longer than 6 minutes. So 2 days before Christmas, Courtney learned that she'd been accepted for surgery at the St. Louis Hospital in Missouri. And when in St. Louis, she will have 2 operations. One is a selective dorsal rhizotomy, which is an SDR, and an operation to lengthen my heel cords and hamstrings, known as the PERCs. And there's a lot of physiotherapy and rehab, but she can't wait to do it so she can do what other teenagers do, and most importantly, I'll be pain-free. In 2016, she said she had to give up playing GAA. She was playing with Parnells. 5 years ago, she was a member of the Rising Stars Dance Club. So what she's saying, it would be great to be like all my friends, getting to wear the high heels on a night out, to be back playing for the GA and back dancing. I've had both of my hobbies stopped due to my cerebral palsy, and I'm set I can't do what my friends are doing. So earlier this month, Courtney, and who's the youngest of three children, launched an appeal to raise the funds for the surgery. And I've raised nearly 2,000 already. So people are running marathons, there'll be a benefit night, lots of other things happening in the area. So she's hoping to get to the US later on this year for what would be the best Christmas present ever. And she said there'll be no stopping her now, so once I get going. And if you're interested, go to Courtney's Cerebral Palsy Wish on Facebook.
And maybe somebody listening there would donate to that, or somebody who maybe might be in a position to help out might do that. Maybe.
Indeed, yes.
Maybe there's some philanthropist or somebody with a lot of money might just help this young lady. But I'm sure every little contribution that she gets will be very much appreciated. It's incredible that she was so well for so long, really, isn't it?
Indeed. Well, that seems to be one of the things. Enable Ireland have a couple of pages on an SDR. Yeah. And it seems the HSE do approve this. And they don't do it in Ireland, they do it in Leeds. But they really do it only for children, you know, 3 to 10.
Ah, right.
So once you go past that, you know, you have to get it done yourself, basically.
You're on your own. Okay, best of luck, Courtney, and fair play to you. At least she's taking matters into her own hands and actually, you know, getting out there and doing something about it.
Yeah.
Well done to her. Okay, Ken, we'll come back to the other bits and pieces maybe a little bit later in the programme.
Your 24-hour community radio station.
FM. Now, Ken, a couple of other things happening around the north side and around the city. Those who are listening to Fergus Carroll a little bit earlier in the morning here on Near FM will have heard him talking to Pat Hooper about the AXA Raheny 5 Mile race, which
Indeed.
Is tomorrow.
Yes.
And it's a long time now on the go. So it's tomorrow at 3 p.m.
Well, I want to say this is a bigger event than you think it is.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Yes.
And
yes.
I have to say, you know, about 10 years ago, I decided to drive down to the beach on Sunday afternoon with all the kids in the car, and I'd go down Watermill Road at 3 o'clock.
Big mistake.
1,000 people came the other way and I was stuck there for half an hour. So if you're in Raheny tomorrow afternoon, just beware. Now, this is a huge event. So it's for, you know, runners, joggers, walkers, anybody of any ability. Nobody goes home empty. Every finisher is guaranteed the famous Raheny 5 plaque plus a goodie bag. If you want to enter, you can do it today. If you go down to the AXA Insurance office, which is on 4 Main Street, Raheny, you'd actually see Dick Hooper down there, who's one of our more famous runners. And you can pay your money over. They don't take entries on the day.
Yeah.
So you need to get down there today if you can.
Yeah.
Now, what I will say is I was also having a look at a bit of information, blah, 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 and came across the Facebook page. Big post there about Near FM says,
yes.
Near FM's really, really, really involved in this to be broadcasting live fair because of Carol's manager. And some of our presenters will be there running on the day.
That's
Dave O'Carroll and...
Dun, 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 dun.
Misha,
Ralph.
August. There's more though. There's Sabrina Ryan as well,
yes,
and
yes.
there's Kieran Murray as well. So there's
a big contingent. Indeed, yes,
a big contingent. So a great day ahead. Tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Now, one we spoke about last week or the week before, Sarah, I think, was Chinese New Year Festival. You spoke to one of the organisers from the Chinese New Year Festival.
Was Joey there,
yeah.
The communications guy, and he was very excited to be working on the festival for his first time this year. I saw on the news last night it was kicking off and looks to be very colourful and very exciting.
It does, and it runs not just for one day or one night, it runs all the way to February the 12th. And Ken, this year is the year of the rooster.
Indeed. Well, I want to say, as I wasn't here that week, I caught 5 minutes of the show, and that was just that interview. And I want to reward Sarah the interview question for 2017 when she asked, is chicken balls and spice bags what Irish people think Chinese culture is all about?
Well,
I thought that was the best question I'd heard in years.
I like the way they've turned it on its head a little bit, though, because I saw one of the papers yesterday had a feature on how to cook quite a classic spice bag at home. So
yeah.
Maybe they're embracing that. The Chinese are actually happy to allow us to have that as our interpretation.
But again, having a look at, you know, the website for they have, I mean, they've had tons of events.
Yeah.
You know, there's music events, literary events. A lot of stuff is free. It runs for 2 weeks. If you have a look at the website, you'll find all about it. And in terms of the year, the rooster, what they do is they do, you know, it goes for the entire year, but we do it every month. So the rooster gets up early. So if you're born the year of the rooster, you like to get up early and you're independent, you work hard.
Absolutely. But Sarah...
Hence I wasn't born in the year the rooster.
I wasn't born in the year of rooster either.
I don't think I was either. But anyway, Sarah, as you know, I like to give Ken some big words to get his teeth into and get his chops around.
Yes.
So an artistic take on data privacy happened during the week there at the Project Art Centre. Do you want to tell us about that, Ken?
No.
Why not? Because of the big words, is it?
Because it's not on my list here.
Is it not on your list? Oh, well, you missed that one because there's the Goethe Institute Ireland presents two. They presented two events that consider and explore data privacy in our digital age. I must have slipped up now not giving you that one.
No, because I know the Goethe Institute. I do a bit of work with them on a regular basis.
I can't even pronounce it. So, well, look, there was they had an interesting thing called Under Surveillance, where they had a dinner and a discussion about digital information, data protection and identity. And that was on Wednesday evening. On Thursday evening last, the Turkish artist Nezaket Ekici presented the performance and installation Zeitgeist. Is it possible to see modern cities becoming more and more identical with an outsider's eye? Was one of the questions. To what extent is Dublin still itself? Was another question. In the face of a constructed persona, does the city still embrace its own reality? And it was an interesting discussion. And if you want to read more about it, projectartcentre.ie is up there. Have you any more stories there, or is that where I cut it off?
No, you sent me loads of others, but not that one.
The Temple Bar Trad
Fest. Temple Bar Trad Fest, yes, we have that one, and that's great as well, and that's running this weekend as well.
Yeah.
Again, there's a huge amount of events I really didn't know about, and it was amazing when I went and looked at the website. You know, there's what they're doing is their theme this year is Trad Red Frontiers. They have a stellar lineup, headline concerts, historic buildings, iconic buildings, St. Patrick's Cathedral, Dublin City Hall, Dublin Castle, St. Werburgh's Church, St. Mitchin's, the Button Factory. Most of those events, a couple of them are sold out. A few of them are free. They're what they call their front row sessions at loads of pubs around the country. But there is tons happening in this festival.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Amazing. And we've often heard Glasnevin being described as the dead centre of Dublin.
Yes,
of course.
Yes.
But the pun here was that it's also dead interest.
Indeed, yes. I done this a few years ago and it's a good afternoon out. So what they do, it's an alternative view of the varied heritage that Ireland's largest cemetery holds and the history within its walls. So you get to learn all the sculptures, the symbolism, the architecture, the art, the sporting heroes, the horticulture, much, much more. So you get to visit the graves, hear the stories, little known figures such as Maria Higgins, a woman who died once but was buried twice. You get to hear about the Irish chaplain who witnessed the liberation of Bergen-Belsen.
Hold on, I have to stop you there. Say that again. A woman who died once but was buried twice.
Yes.
Can we verify that?
You need to go on the tour to find out. It's full of suspense.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, well, look, would you not come back and tell us a little bit more about that story, maybe?
But I mean, they say there's lots of things, you know. There's, Daniel O'Donnell has the grave, the big pillar there. Michael Collins.
Daniel O'Donnell? Or Daniel O'Connell?
Daniel O'Connell, excuse me. Being a bit premature there. But again, tours take place during the week, over the weekend, Saturday, Sundays. Tickets are 13 for an adult and 10 for senior citizens, students and adults. But for the 13 euros, you actually get into the museum as well, and you get €5 credit on their archaeology or genealogy service.
And they have a lovely cafe up there
as
well.
And they have a lovely cafe up there as well, too.
A coffee and a bun.
Absolutely.
A great idea. Only a couple of days left in this now, with the Jersey January at the GAA Museum.
I have to say, I was impressed with this.
It's good, isn't it?
Little award to the marketing person.
Very clever.
Yes. So if you wear your GAA County Club or Kellogg's Cool Camp jersey, you get half price admission into the Crow Park Stadium tour this month. It applies to adults, children, senior citizens, family tickets, and you get free entry into the State of Art Interactive GAA Museum that brings visitors on a journey that vividly illustrates the story of the GAA games from the ancient times to present. So,
have you ever been in?
I have there once, yes, and yeah. I had the tour around the top as well.
Sarah, have you ever been in?
I still have a bit of grass from Crow Park
that
I shouldn't admit to, but I decided it was just an occasion that I was never going to be there legitimately playing on the Crow Park field.
I suppose so. Wexford wouldn't be there that often.
That often, yes, absolutely. No.
We have two high calibre managers this year now.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
Keep the dream alive.
Keep the dream alive as well. Ken, we're running short, so I'm really intrigued by the Banjo and Bovril Festival.
Indeed, I have to say I was intrigued.
Do tell.
Yes, yes.
hotel.
It's actually a good reason to go to Bray for a change.
We love the people of Bray.
We love the people in Bray.
Things happen south of Dublin City as well.
Really, don't go across the Leafy Dad often, but if you do, here's actually a good reason. So what just happens, you know, the trawlers come into Bray, all the fishermen would get off the boat and they'd head up to the harbour bar and they'd have a cup of bovril, sit down, sit in for a night drinking porter, singing songs, playing guitars, borans, mandolins, whatever instruments came to hand. So again, they have this, you know, event on this weekend. It's all free. And they've really a really good lineup. So you got Mick Flannery, the Eskies are good friends, Quivin O'Rahilly, David Keenan. They have a huge lineup tonight, tomorrow night. Tons of events happening here. They've three or four different stages, and it's all free.
All free.
And well, it's good acts. Go see them.
You couldn't. So it's all the bees, the banjo, and the bovril
in Bray,
out in Bray. Now, Ken. You have to explain to listeners, your son was very famous during the week. He ended up in the Indo, was it, or the Times?
Oh, the Independent.
The Irish Independent.
The two-page spread in the Irish Independent.
The headline is, A Leap of Faith, The World of Parkour.
Parkour.
Parkour. Now, I have no idea what that is. What is that? Explain.
The literal translation is free running.
Free running.
So basically what you do is you use the city as your playground.
Okay.
And you go and you run on things, you jump off things, and you use any instrument or anything you can find as an instrument of joy and pleasure.
Would you not get into trouble for that? Now, that sounds...
You do. You can get into it a little bit, because you try to get into areas that you can't. So if you take an example, you know, there's the waterfall in Stephen's Green. So there's lots of rocks and lots of heights and elevations there, so you can jump off things, jump up on things. But the park ranger doesn't like you doing that.
Okay.
The security guards in there for terrorists, because it's all corporate, don't like you doing it there either.
So why was he in the paper? Was he caught doing something he shouldn't have been doing?
No, just they were looking to the reporter was looking to try something new and different. So
right.
Adam, the only insured people to teach outdoor parkour in Ireland, Adam and another guy called Brian.
Right.
So he's the official guy. They're looking to set up the national governing body for parkour in Ireland. They have one in the UK, so they're getting there.
And is this likely at some point to become a sort of a recognised sport or an Olympic sport, perhaps?
Well, obviously, just the first thing is you set it up as a national governing body,
right?
And then, in terms of, obviously, you'd love to get it to see it into the Olympics. But the thing about the Olympics is it has to be practiced on a worldwide basis.
Okay.
To do that, and it's pretty European. Now, you see it a lot in films. They love have people running around, jumping on things, going from cross buildings, jumping up and down. So it's very
sort
popular.
Of James Bond type.
James Bond does it.
Thing.
Yeah, you've seen James Bond doing parkour.
Okay, well done. Well done to him. It's Adam, is it?
Yeah, Adam Kilbride.
Adam Kilbride. There you go.
Remember the
name. Indeed,
well done,
yes,
Adam.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. And a proud daddy here telling us all about it. Okay, a couple of other things to mention just before we finish up. The Swords CFR goes live. I think this is a fantastic initiative. Sarah, I don't know if you've heard of this anywhere around the country either. Swords Community First Responders. The CFR is Community First Responders. Are delighted to have gone live with the National Ambulance Service at a ceremony in Swords on last Friday. Chairperson Claire Ahern said, our fully trained cardiac first responders will be attending cardiac arrest, choking, stroke and chest pain emergencies within the Swords area. So basically what happens is when you dial 999 and you're looking for the ambulance and somebody's in trouble or appear to be in trouble, at the very same time as the ambulance is called, the local community first responder gets a message to say somebody's in trouble in X location, and they're likely to get there ahead of the ambulance.
Yes, yeah.
And therefore hopefully improve the prognosis of the people who are in trouble. So it's a fantastic idea. I'd never heard of it. Have you heard of it before?
I know we launched an air ambulance in Wexford last week, which is possibly a slightly different thing, but there definitely seems to be a move on about this whole kind of voluntary aspect of community spirit and people just really watching out for each other in all sorts of different ways, which is
there is one in Raheny,
right?
And they have three defibrillators set around the area, but they have all the responders there are on the same list, so if you get something in Raheny area, these guys get you before
these
the ambulance.
Guys will get you before the ambulance. Well, it's great. I mean, and the ambulance do great work, and they usually get there fairly
hopefully
quickly.
The ambulance will get there too,
as well, but it's nice to have somebody there to help you on your way. Okay, thanks Sarah, thanks Ken.
My pleasure.